Well, on Mothering Sunday, it seems most appropriate to think about families and family relationships, to which both our readings draw attention. We see Jesus' concern and support for his mother and his disciples. We see his care of his mother after his death, and the role that his disciples will play in this. And then we move on to the epistle to the Colossians, and St. Paul challenges God's chosen people who are dearly loved to clothe themselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. And this is worked out in bearing with each other and forgiving one another. And of course, over all of these virtues, to put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. I suppose for most of us, our experience of family life is positive, full of good memories and of love and support, even in bad times. My memories of growing up with parents who cared for me was that I was bandaged up when I frequently fell over and cut myself and scraped myself. My father, who continued to encourage me with my schoolwork, helping, listening, testing, demonstrating. And they both provided me with all the necessities of a happy home life. They shared my successes, and they gave me emotional support when I faced disappointment. When they were reaching the end of their lives, I sought to support them and to offer care. And in the last 6 months of my mother's life, I travelled down every week from Rushden to Cardiff. I left on a Tuesday evening after leading the Bible study at church, arriving home somewhat after midnight, and then I stayed the whole of Wednesday, coming back Wednesday evening. It enabled me to spend a day with them. It gave me an opportunity to tell my mother of all the things that were important to me about her care and her love for me. And in the last years of his life, my father moved up from Cardiff to a bungalow in Rushden to be near to our home, where we could offer direct support. And in fact, he did too, by collecting Joanna from school often. So, family values. I mean, there's a general recognition that family values are based on core principles of ethics, beliefs such as honesty and respect, responsibility that guide how families interact with one another, make decisions and handle challenges. And these shape a foundation for our daily living. And where they are part of a family, the nurturing of children. All of these family values are caught rather than taught. We learn them in interaction with others. The Bible describes family as a sacred institution established by God for companionship, protection, and the raising of children in faith. The Bible speaks about honouring parents, about parents, strictly speaking fathers, not exasperating their children. Mothers don't tend to exasperate their children. It's the role of fathers, apparently. The importance of mutual love and unity. However, the Bible doesn't cover over the challenges of dysfunction and disagreements, betrayal and violence. But ultimately, it offers the hope of the spiritual family of God, our shared Christian life. And as Christians, we recognize that as well as the family we're born into, there's also the family of the church, the body of Christ. And here in our church family is the call of St. Paul for compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, patience, and forgiveness. Now, this is certainly what I have experienced in the churches of which Sheila and I have been a part. including our real joy and the privilege of being amongst God's people here. So what are good family values? To some extent, we'll work these out for ourselves within our own families. They will depend on many factors, including our own experiences, the society in which we grow up, our personality and beliefs, and of course, our views are likely to change over time as our experiences change. When we lived in Rushden, our older two children were growing into their teens, arguably the most interesting part of life. One member of our congregation who had toddlers thought that she knew how best we should be bringing up our teenagers. Being very diplomatic as minister and wife, we listened to their advice, biting our tongues, not saying something like, "Wait until your children are teenagers." This was emphasized in our thinking when she described her annoyance when one of her children spread toothpaste over the carpets, the walls, and their clothes. But here are some examples of family values that we might recognize as helping to develop healthy households and indeed a healthy church. Empathy would be the first one. Jesus encouraged us to follow the golden rule, to do unto others what we would have done unto us. Treat people with compassion, with kindness, with understanding. Consider the emotions of other members of your family, seeking to understand their points of view. We can help each other to develop empathy by talking about our feelings, sharing our needs and our concerns. We do this as families, and we should be doing it also as a church. Another one is making time. Shared activities help family members to grow. It's important to prioritize time with our family members and our extended family in the church wherever it's possible. Quality family time includes cooking and eating together, sitting down, sharing experiences, sharing memories, telling stories. The Emmaus Road encounter of Jesus with his two dejected disciples after the crucifixion and the discovery of the empty tomb is an excellent example of how to do this. Jesus drew alongside Cleopas and his wife, listened to their concerns, asked them to share their experiences with him, spoke to them about the truth of God's promises, and then stopped to have a meal with them when they invited him into their home. And in this way, they recognized him and the truth of the gospel, the resurrection of Christ. Another value we might look for is honesty, telling the truth, which is not always easy. But it's essential to maintaining trust between family members and the church members. I suppose the case of Ananias and Sapphira in Acts 5 is a salutary lesson. The land was theirs, the cash from the sale was theirs. What was wrong was when they told the church that they'd given the whole amount and not just a part of it to God's work in the church. There are consequences for lies, not necessarily being struck down dead, as was the case with Ananias and Sapphira, but we should be prepared to speak the truth in love, not shaming others for their mistakes, but making our care and understanding of them a priority. Then comes perseverance. Our families and our church family will face many complex challenges over the years. We can develop resilience by creating shared goals, practicing self-care, and working together to overcome obstacles. I think of the example of Nehemiah in the book that bears his name as an excellent place to see God's leading in perseverance. Nehemiah faces enormous tasks in rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem, which had been destroyed by the Babylonian conquest. He also faced the antagonistic attitudes of the nations around, who sought to undermine the work and any confidence the Jews might have had. Nehemiah also had to plan strategically and encourage the people in their work. He did this by working with them and encouraging them at every step of the way. But then lastly, and perhaps most importantly, the value that we might really want to develop is love. According to the World Wide Web, deep affection and attachment keep families together. Simple ways will demonstrate our love for our family, which can include giving small but thoughtful gifts, providing physical affection, and verbally expressing our feelings. As well as those in our today's reading from Colossians 3, Paul gives a very clear word about human relationships to the church and for the church family itself in that very well-known passage that is often read from 1 Corinthians 13, often read at weddings. Love is patient. Love is kind. It doesn't envy. It doesn't boast. It's not proud. It's not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. And so on this Mothering Sunday, here is a short story. A mother held her newborn baby and very slowly rocked him back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And while she held him, she sang, "I'll love you forever. I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, your mummy I'll be." The baby grew. He grew and grew until he was 2 years old, and he ran around the house and he pulled books off the shelves and he pulled all the food out of the refrigerator and he took his mother's watch and flushed it down the toilet. Sometimes his mother would say, "This child is driving me crazy." But at night time, when the two-year-old was quiet, she opened the door to his room, looked over the side of his cot and sang, "I'll love you forever. I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, your mummy I'll be." The little boy grew and grew until he was 9 years old, when he never wanted to come in for dinner, never wanted to have a bath or shower, and when his relatives turned up, he often said bad words. Sometimes his mother wanted to sell him to the zoo. But at night time, when he was asleep, his mother quietly opened the door to his room, looked over at his bed and sang, "I'll love you forever. I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, your mummy I'll be." The boy grew into a teenager, had strange friends, and wore strange clothes and listened to strange music. And sometimes his mother thought that she was in the zoo. But at night time, when he was asleep, she would open the door to his room, look at him and sing, "I'll love you forever. I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, your mummy I'll be." The teenager grew into a man and left home and got a house on the other side of town. Sometimes on dark nights, his mother drove across town and parked outside his house. She looked up at his window and sang quietly to herself, "I'll love you forever. I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, your mummy I'll be." That mother got older and older, and one day called her son and said, "You better come and see me, because I'm old and sick." So her son came to see her, and when he came to the door, his mother tried to sing, "I'll love you forever, I'll like you for always, as long as I'm living, your mummy I'll be." But she couldn't finish the song because she was too ill, and her son held her in his arms and rocked her gently in her bed and sang, "I'll love you forever, I'll like you for always, as long as I'm living, my mummy you'll be." When the son got home that night, he stood for a long time on the stairs. Then he went into the room where his own new baby daughter was sleeping. He picked her up in his arms and gently rocked her, singing, "I'll love you forever, I'll like you for always, as long as I'm living, my baby you'll be." Near the cross, as Jesus was dying, his mother was standing with his mother's sister, Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus saw his mother there and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to her, "Woman, here is your son." And to the disciple, "Here is your mother." From that time on, the disciple took her into his home. Here is our challenge on Mothering Sunday. I'll love you forever. I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, my family you'll be.